Y'all, tour season is upon us, and we've just added a bonus show to the roster. Jay and I will be heading to Madison, Alabama on May 23rd in partnership with the Rocket City Trash Pandas minor league baseball team for a one-of-a-kind experience. We will have a full live show, complete with meet and greet, Jay vs. Ben, and a live recording of Through the Gryffindor, plus admission to the Trash Pandas game. Pricing for this show is a little bit different. There's a flat $75 ticket that gets you the meet and greet access, our recording, and the game all included. Tickets are available starting January 16th at 11 a.m. Eastern or 10 a.m. Central and are limited. But also don't forget that we're additionally heading to the Southwest for shows in Denver, Salt Lake City, Las Vegas, Phoenix, Houston, and Dallas, all kicking off on March 7th through the 16th. Links to all of the shows will be available at supercarlinbrothers.com/events or in the show notes for every episode. What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
In every episode, but at Disney World right now. Well, we're recording in studio, but this is ahead of time. Our physical bodies right now, as you listen, if this is the day it came out, are in Disney.
I know. Well, actually, we're in Disney, but we're also prepping to leave.
Yeah, we've just finished a week at Disney.
Boy, howdy, my pups are hurting. You know what I'm saying?
I know what you mean, man. It's a lot of walking around down there.
20,000 steps a day.
It happens.
By golly, I think we hit 30 one day.
Ain't no doubt. Didn't plan out the Magic Kingdom route very well.
No. We went back and forth and back and we forth. Did. Frontierland, Tomorrow Land,
dude,
adventure.
The prep Disney makes you do, like, it makes it better when you're there. But we were up at, like, you know, 6 a.m. last week, you know, getting our coffee ready, getting our, you know, our laptops open and our phones, and it's like, all right, today is Lightning Lane day, we got to be on the ticket here. Like, the night before, me and Beth are like, okay, Magic Kingdom, okay, this is we are probably all gonna do this, these kids want to do it, these kids don't, we're gonna get the fast passes to these rides, these are our priorities. And then you get in there the next day and it's like, okay, you're selecting basically for the entire group of people at one time.
Yes,
you know, and you just have to trust that they trust that you trust that, you know what you're doing. But you go to select everyone and it's like, oh, suddenly I can't select Tyler to be in the group because his name got added later and it's not linked appropriately to the room, and now we're on customer service and it's like, oh my god, every minute that ticks by is people taking up Lightning Lanes that we might have been able to get, and you're like, oh my god, this is it's stressful.
I mean, prepping for like a Disney trip, I almost feel like is like a competitive sport, you know?
It
like
can be.
There's so much you need to know, and it's like an ever evolving activity. Like, it's the kind of thing where when we first started getting into, you know, going to Disney like over a decade ago, I think you and Beth took a trip, and then like Alice and I had the camper, we were going to go, and you and Beth were going to join and stay with us in the camper and stuff. I feel like there was like a very well established and almost seemed like long like history of what it was like to go and set up like your Lightning Lanes. You know, it's like you basically 60 days out, you could go through and you could book what you were going to do 60 days from now. And if you weren't at the computer those 60 days prior, that was it.
Right.
You know, but like what's crazy to me is that we've gone to Disney practically like every year for the past, you know, 5 years.
Yeah.
In one capacity or another. And it almost seems like every single year they've completely overhauled and changed the rules.
Right.
So it's like people could be like, oh, you guys are Disney people, like you can show us all the ropes. And it's like, honestly, we have to relearn every time.
Every single time at this point.
I don't feel like my experience has counted towards any amount of present day knowledge at all.
Right.
You know, because now it's like 60 days out, you can book your reservations for like dining, which meant like a different day. We woke up early and did all those types of things. And now we're 7 days out and waking up and doing our Lightning Lanes, which we can now do 7 days in advance or whatever. But I mean, it's just like, you know, then it's like if you're just going to the parks, like if you just have park tickets, you can only do it 3 days in advance. Like there's all sorts of weird moving parts. And on this particular trip, we somehow, I feel like it almost feels like my wedding over again in a way, because there are 22 people total who are like in some way, shape or form attached to like our traveling party.
Right.
So it's like, we're not just going like your family and my family. It's like there are grandparents on both sides of the family that are also traveling with us. Tyler and his daughter Olivia are coming with us. Like we've got just, you know, a myriad of different like tendrils going every which way.
So, I know. Yeah. It's just like, wow, this is going to be quite the trip.
Right. Right.
Yes. Or has been quite the trip.
It has been quite the trip. But it's like, it almost makes you wonder because they do talk a lot about how there is like the most amount of fun when it comes to vacation is like booking the vacation. Like a lot of people say like that is the maximum enjoyment you will get. And it's, I mean, it's not that you're not like enjoying things the whole time you're at the beach or at Disney or anything like that. Like it's not like you're having a poor time, but like there's like almost like a concentrated amount of joy that you get like when you book. It's like that, like this like big, like, oh my gosh, we're going, you know? And so like part of me almost wonders if the people like the Imagineers at Disney, this is them going like beyond painting the walls go away green so that you don't pay attention to like, you know, this is like a service entrance and they don't really want you to look at it. So they paint it this special color that they know psychologically you won't look at.
Right.
Similar with like the trash cans. And then they've got, you know, there's always a trash can within 30 steps of you. So it's like, you don't ever really need to like figure out where to throw your trash away because it's just, it's always there, which also means that then the parks are very clean.
Right.
You know, as well. It's like, everything is like very well managed. But part of me almost wonders if they were extending this now to the booking process and they're like, we're going to give you, I mean, and this is me probably giving Disney too much credit because also the fact that they charge for lightning lanes now is like so frustrating.
They got a real problem where everyone kind of liked the lightning lane process once upon a time because it was just like included in the price of the ticket. It's just like,
yes,
boom, there you go. You get 3 lightning lanes. When you've used one, you can apply another one, you know?
Exactly.
There you go.
Yep.
All there is to it. And then they had a new CEO and they were like, we're going to do this thing called Genie Plus and you have to pay for it now.
Right.
But it'll recommend it and it'll point you all these different ways. And like, we were there 1 year with the Genie Plus system. And like, I understood like how, like we had little kids at the time. And as such, a lot of the rides we wanted to go on were like kind of low weight rides anyway.
Sure.
But it very easily got us like lightning lane. Like we got to the fast pass lane of like a bunch of different things.
Right.
And I was like, that actually worked really well for our exact situation where we had a bunch of little kids. If we were adults, I don't know if it would have worked as well, but it did that time. Then they got rid of Genie Plus because overwhelmingly people didn't like it. But it's like they did a thing where like, well, we didn't used to charge you money for it, but then we started and everyone didn't like it. So we changed it. But also we just changed it from what it was. But like, it turns out we really liked that profit. So we can't just not charge you for it anymore.
We started accounting for the income
right.
that comes from charging you for this thing. So we're going back to what it used to be called, but now also there is a price tag
right.
next to it.
That, so, and it's so frustrating.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And so there is that. So I'm, you know, in no way would I be like, yeah, it's better that they charge you for it. 'Cause it's not, but what I was going to say though, is that like, because you get the booking process, which we did, you know, 8 months in advance, that was like, because we're Disney Vacation Club members, that was like the earliest we could do it. So, 8 months out for that. And then 60 days out, we did all of our food. And then 7 days out, we do all of our fast passes, and then we get to like the actual journey day and like, you know, get there and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the from a just sheer excitement towards my vacation perspective, I've had like 3 marquee days leading up to it where like I got like this big, you know, wave of, oh my gosh, we're gonna go and eat in the pyramid in Mexico during our day at Epcot.
Yeah.
We're doing the sci-fi drive-in, you know, diner at Hollywood Studios. Mm-hmm. And you know, the Magic Kingdom, you know, breakfast and everything. Like, you know, it's kind of like you get like all these like fun little like surges along the way. So it's like, I mean, there is some fun in that, you know, it's kind of like, and then in addition to those 3 really fun days of getting to book, you just have the general excitement of Addison asking me, you know, 2 weeks before Christmas, like, when are we going to Disney? It's like, okay, we have Christmas and then we have New Year's and then, you know, we're doing these things and then we go to Disney.
Right.
You know, it's like, even that, it's like every single time she asks about it and is excited about it, it's like, it's fun all over again.
Right.
So. Yeah.
So there's all that. And then there's like the other preparations we've done. You know, the whole family last week had all of our different pins out and we were sort of like, they're scattered all over the house and a bunch of different binders. Like we had to consolidate. These are, you know, scrapper pins that maybe aren't great, but might be good for just like board trading or something,
sure.
Which I know people don't like the scrapper. I get it. I don't like it either.
Right.
But then like, these are our real pins, which maybe we could trade with like real people who were like sitting, you know, at the pin trade and stuff. That's all good. You know, we ordered more realistic like pins, and you know, I'm about to go through and I was going to try and get like some Lorcana cards sorted that might be like, oh, if we run into these characters, you know, maybe we get them to sign them or something.
Oh, it'd be so cool. Yes, to have like an Elsa card signed by Elsa,
right? Exactly, stuff
that's
like that.
That's pretty great. I love that.
Yeah, so tiny little preparations like that that also just make the act of going more fun as well.
Yes. No, I think that's really great. And I mean, and then also there's always just the, like, I feel like Disney always sparks. It's almost like back to school shopping a little bit for me, where like, I feel like whenever I'm getting ready for a Disney trip, I will get like kind of experimental with like clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why. I feel right. like maybe like when you're on vacation, when you're at Disney, it's like, you could be like, yeah, I'm stretching outside of like my normal boundaries a little bit because it's Disney and
yeah.
like, that's kind of fun. And you know, now, if not now, then when? But like a lot of times that like allows me the opportunity, as is so often the case with both you and I, where it's almost like we need to like have a dumb reason to grant ourselves permission to try something.
Right.
Which I fully understand is not required, but it for whatever reason is also part of my brain's engineering.
I know. It's like at some point we're just gonna be like, I'm just doing this for me because I want to.
Yes, right.
End of sentence. Yeah.
That's it.
That's it.
Yeah, I want to try these shorts, so right. I'm doing it.
So I did it, and then yeah. I did it. Actually, right. Ben, can I tell you something? On this note.
Okay, lay it on.
Okay,
me.
I put it on here, and I made it vague on purpose, but it says Ben changed my mind about something.
Oh,
I know.
Is it? Hold on. What day is it?
It is.
Where are we?
It's February 2nd.
It's February 2nd,
yeah.
2026.
Yeah.
Y'all, momentous day, momentous occasion. I don't know. I mean, first time?
Not first time, not at all.
Surely the first time ever.
I just brought it up because it was something we talked about on the pop, so I thought it'd be fun to re-bring up on the pop.
Okay.
All
right, well, I'm so excited. Lay it on me.
Okay, all right. Do you remember when we were talking about, we had a whole conversation, it was a real strong opinions about weak things thing about belts.
Yes.
Well, I'm wearing belts now.
You're wearing belts.
I'm wearing belts.
Welcome to the belt clan.
Thank you.
I'm not going to call it a clan, but the club.
Let's avoid that word.
Yeah. How about that? What made you join in on belts?
I think several things. Okay. So once upon a time, I used to be required to wear a belt for work every day.
Okay.
You know,
sure.
It was just like, you know, I work in a regular office. You have to dress nice. If you're wearing khakis, you got to have a belt because your shirt has to be tucked in. Otherwise, it looks silly or whatever.
Sure.
You know, so I had, you know, my black belt and my brown belt, and that was kind of that.
Nice.
And then when we started doing this job, it was sort of like a, you know what? I'm not tucking my shirt in every day anymore because I don't have to wear button-ups every day because I'm my own boss. I can wear whatever I want to work.
Right, exactly.
And as such, like, I don't have to do this anymore. I don't have to, because it's not like it was like holding my pants up. It was just like, this is part of the uniform almost.
Right.
You know? So I think I had like a real, like, this is like a mental, like, victory separating thing. It's like, I don't have to do this. This is a decision I get to make for myself now.
I can understand that. Right. Yes. I mean, it's probably like on some level, like my, when I'm home alone or something like that, the thing that like I order is like my Pizza Hut personal pan pizza
right.
thing. It's like, it's plenty good and I do love it, but I think that probably a portion of it is almost like, I get to do this because there's no one to tell me I can't.
Right.
You know, and it's like, and probably like that's like the small dosage, but like, give me 3 weeks at my house by myself for whatever reason, you know, I don't think that I would be like every night. I think it would be like, okay, I'm going to do it once. And then after that, I'll probably fall back into my fairly normal eating habits.
Right.
You know, like there's something to it. So I understand where you're coming from. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. The other part of it was that I once upon a time had a belt that I really liked, and I wore it so often that it just like collapsed in my hands one day.
Yes.
You know,
right.
the metal fell off, the leather tore. I was like, man, well, that's sort of that.
Yeah.
And then I was had I continued in, you know, like regular office life, I probably would have needed to like actually just go out and buy another belt. But anytime I would go look at belts, then they'd be like stupid expensive.
Sure.
And I would be like, I don't, you know what? I don't have to wear one and I don't even need one. So why bother?
Right.
You know, at this point I have my one black belt, which is fine because anytime I'm going to like a formal occasion, I'm probably wearing black pants anyway.
Sure.
So there it is. But then when we were in New York City last year, we were in one of our favorite stores, Faherty.
Yep.
Which is one of my new favorite clothing stores. And They had exactly, it's the belt I'm wearing right now. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is exactly the belt I've been looking for. It's just like casual, but cool and like whatever. And it's just, I mean, it's just a brown belt, you know, that's all there is to it.
That's all there is to it.
All there is to it. But I had it. And then, you and I were having a conversation, another conversation. I think it might have even been on the pop, but we didn't have like a full talk about it. You just sort of like mentioned a little phrase in the middle of a sentence one day about like having like, seven, like your outfit should have like seven parts or something.
Yeah, like if you're gonna get dressed in the morning, it's like you've almost got like your shoes, pants, shirt, that's three,
right?
You know, and then fill out the additional seven,
right?
Or the, you know, the other four in order to like have like a complete outfit.
A complete outfit.
So like a watch counts. Yeah. I guess a ring probably counts, you know, if you're wearing like a wedding band or something.
Yeah. So like what could fill out the rest of those things.
Yes.
Right. And so I was like, you know, and then I looked into that and I was like, this is actually a really good like rule. And I was going to like, I started trying to like apply it. Like, okay, what can I do to make this like more of an outfit instead of just the clothes I'm wearing? And so, belt is a very easy one to add every day.
Yeah.
That like breaks up the pattern and, you know, creates divide between your, you know, different layers and stuff like that. So that just started being like, this is one of the answers. Cause you're right. Otherwise it was like pants, shoes, shirt. And that's pretty much all I was going on most days. And I'm like not even halfway there.
I mean, honestly, like I'm thinking about myself right now and I'm like, well, I only got halfway dressed. Basically.
Basically.
I am currently half nude.
Right. Yeah. So, I guess your shoes count too.
Yes.
Right? Shoes, pants, shirt, whatever. Shoes, pants, that's what I said. I already said that. Three.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's only three things. So then belt would make it four. And then you usually have like a jacket or something as like five. I think my mustache counts as a thing.
Oh, I tend to think
it's like
so,
such
yeah.
like a thing.
It's a very like I think especially because like it's like a very like design choice, you know.
Yeah.
Especially because your mustache is like the like
yeah, like it's typically like got like the curls in it. It's like a right. It's like an accent as much as it is just it's not just like I just have facial hair, you know.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I would wager that I would say like glasses in some way, shape, or form could probably also
yeah,
fall
I think
into
the glasses
this.
Count and then like a watch. Is another good way to do it. So now I've just been wearing the like fitness watch I got for Christmas every day because I enjoy the data it gives me. But prior to that, I'd been trying to wear a watch every day because we have a bunch from when we used to do Vincero watch deals. And they would send us another watch like every time. And it was like, this is so cool. I have a watch for every occasion.
I mean, like an actual watch collection.
Like an actual watch collection, which I will admit to you here, I would never use to tell the time.
No.
I was simply wearing them as fashion accessories. But now I'm using my watch to tell the time. So there's that.
Yes, yeah. Indeed. You know what's funny about it is that it almost reminds me, like, I think something that started dawning on me about, like, the glory that is Thanksgiving dinner is that every dish is almost, like, fitting this seven-part rule. Like, maybe not all the way up to seven, but, like, when you make casseroles, for example, like a green bean casserole, you're not just making green beans, but, like, you're combining like a multitude of different ingredients to make like a dish. And like on any given night at like my house, at least, and I mean, maybe this is just going to be like me revealing our own like, you know, laziness or lack of effort or something in this department, but very rarely are we making like, we'll have, you know, like burgers or steak or pork or something like that. You know, like we'll have like our protein as like the main centerpiece, and then we'll usually try to have like two side dishes or whatever. But the side dishes are typically like, you know, we'll take green beans and we'll saute them, or we'll take broccoli and steam it, or, you know, like whatever the case may be. But it's a single ingredient side dish,
right?
So it's like it's just broccoli with salt on it,
right,
or something. You know, and so it's like part of me almost thinks like the glory of Thanksgiving Day is that like we're actually taking the effort to combine the green beans with the cream of mushroom soup or whatever it is that makes the, you know, the dish, and putting the crunchy onion bits on top,
right,
and all that type of stuff. So it's like it makes it, you've transformed it from simple, like from the origination point of green beans to a completed product.
Right. Yeah. And now it's a full outfit, you know.
It's a full outfit. Whereas right. I feel like what I'm wearing right now is just green beans.
It's just green beans.
Right. So imagine me green bean it.
Let's see, because you got shoes, pants, shirt, glasses right now.
I guess I have shoes, pants, shirt, glasses, and
you watch. Have a watch. Yeah, right, watch, right. Yeah. But no belt today.
No belt today.
Well, so have you flip flopped then? Because well, you were like a full time belt user.
I would say I still would be a full time belt user. I would say that I similarly have the relationship that you had with the belt that like melted in your hands.
Yeah,
where like. There's, I always think of Katniss from the Hunger Games and the way that she describes like the supple leather of like her.
Her dad's hunting jacket.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And like, you know, so rare is it the case that in today's world, we are using something to the point where it becomes this like heavily worn, like you can almost like feel the essence of the person who once wore it because of like the bends in the leather and the softness and the well-worn notch that was used in all that type of stuff. Like, you know, it's like you can romanticize these types of things because they were used and used well and for like a long time.
Right.
There is something like wonderful about that. And, you know, certain things like, I don't know, like shoes, for example, as much as I love shoes, they do eventually like get dirty and like, you know, very worn out to the point where they lose some of like that original luster. Whereas a belt, I feel like only gains luster the more like broken in mm-hmm. it is. And so I had a belt that I absolutely loved and I wore it all the time. And there was like one tour date on the Midwest tour where I went in and lost a pair of like jeans, belt, shoes, and sweatpants.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. All in one fell swoop. I don't know if it was like a day where we had to like bring our like actual suitcases into the venue, but like we go into the like, you know, the green room or whatever, which are effectively these, you know, a room with a couch, maybe like a fridge or something, you know, a bathroom. And like within minutes it goes from this like kind of empty space to just like an explosion of, you know, posters and Sharpies and, you know, Red Bull cans in our bags and
right.
equipment and gear. And like, I mean, it would be like my dorm room,
right?
You know, not before too long. Like there's kind of stuff everywhere.
Yeah. You just like explode onto the room.
Right. Yes. You know, cause we all load in with like the clothes that we're wearing for like travel and loading, you know, where you're going to be like carrying stuff or potentially like walking like heavy boxes up, you know, stairs and stuff into like our show clothes, which are, you know, much more nice and less comfortable.
Right.
but because of that, then also just like then the roundup at the end of the night where you're whirlwinding it all back into everything. I just somewhere along the way, I lost like all of my things from like one outfit.
Ugh.
And included in that was my favorite belt and a pair of like white sneakers that I had been wearing like aggressively and Viore sweatpants. Ugh. Man, always.
Oh, you lost the Viores.
I know. Yeah. I know. Yeah. So anyway, that has been the problem. And then I've literally like, you know, I think that you have something in here about Parkinson's law, which I think we can come to in just a minute. But I think this is like one of those situations where like in my mind, if I try to think back over, and I've been into plenty of like stores in this amount of time, I've literally probably held a belt in my hand, but I would argue I've had no opportunities since we got back from the Midwest tour at the end of September 2025 to buy a belt.
Took no opportunity to buy a belt.
No opportunities have been available to buy a belt. Obviously.
Weren't we in New York City like 2 weeks ago?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Obviously there have been opportunities. I certainly could have bought one since then. And for whatever reason, I haven't. But it's been irritating to me. I feel like I'm like constantly like hiking my pants up and kind of doing that, like, you know, you grab the sides of your belt loops and you jump in the air and you pull up, you know, and
right.
try to keep your britches where they're supposed to be sitting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Your belt is doing like work in terms of holding your pants up.
It does more work than I would have thought it was doing.
I see.
Until I didn't have it. And then I'm like, yeah, this is really annoying.
Oh, okay. All right. So, well, I've actually, so it's so funny. You said you didn't have an opportunity to buy a belt because since I have bought a belt since we've been to New York.
Oh,
I know.
So we got back from New York like a week ago.
Yeah.
And you've bought a belt since then.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yes. Thank you. It's actually this exact belt that I'm wearing, but in black.
Oh, so. That's the other thing too. I recently just started wearing black jeans. This is another one of those like funny things where like when we were like prepping for tour, it was like,
yeah.
I bet I could wear like black jeans. Cause like, you know, stage blacks is like a thing.
Right.
Like,
right. Like Even though nothing's stopping you from wearing black jeans.
Nobody's ever told me I can't,
mm-hmm.
but like, I feel like I like had this like barrier. And yeah, so then I started wearing black jeans. And then part of the problem with the black jeans was I didn't have a black belt. And then I bought a black belt. And for whatever reason, like, I don't know what size you're supposed to buy belts because I'm like a 32 waist. like pretty solid, pretty consistently.
Yeah.
Have been for about as long as I can possibly remember.
Right.
But like, I feel like if I buy a 32 belt, it's almost like the 32 belt is like, it's too small.
Right.
It's almost like I'm supposed to buy like a 34 belt, but then if I buy a 34 belt, it's way too big.
Hmm.
And so I'm like,
well, I mean, you can adjust a belt, you know?
No, I know. I mean, that's the thing is that, but like, I feel like ideally I would use the second hole in the belt.
Okay.
Like, I mean, and I'm making that up on the spot. I haven't really thought about this, like,
right,
you know, a plenty or anything, but like, I would say that the belt is too big if you're going to like your fifth hole, mm-hmm, you know, like if you're like looping through, pulling it sideways and you've got like 10 inches of like tether available to you, then it feels like you've gone too far.
I think so. I'm looking at my belt at this exact moment and I think it's exactly where it's supposed to be, which is that there needs to be enough through that it uses the little built-in strap holder.
Of course.
Right. Yep. And then also extends into one more belt loop.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Right. So
yeah, I like that. Like,
yeah. So then I've got like maybe 2 inches of belt going through my first belt loop.
Can you tell how many holes though that?
Well, I'm so glad you asked, Ben.
Okay.
Okay. So I typically, in case you're wondering, I am also typically like a 32. That's where I buy my jeans at.
Okay.
You know, fluctuation, stuff like that. Anyway, but so this belt is a 36 belt.
Okay.
Because yes, I want it to be like a little bit longer than the waist so that it can, you know, land where it's landing right now.
Okay, gotcha.
Right. I think I talked a few weeks ago about, you know, how I was unhappy with my weight on the scale back on December 27th.
Okay.
And had been working on that. But so when I started, I was at like a second hole on the belt loop like situation.
Okay.
Right? Which I was like, okay, that is like a noticeable difference because typically I would have been a third hole person on this particular belt. And I was like, oh boy, like there's like physical like data I can just stare at, you know?
Right. Yeah. The data is which belt loop am I using?
Right. It's like, yeah. I have officially gone up a loop, you know,
right,
up a hole.
right. Yes.
Which I was like, oh, I don't love it. But since then, I feel like my journey over the past like month or so has been pretty good. I'm actually down like 13 pounds.
That's pretty unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of, you know, just adjusting my eating and then a lot of just like working out and stuff. A lot of swimming and weightlifting. That's what I've been doing. Then this morning, so I pretty quickly got back to third hole territory.
Nice.
Which was like, I was like, okay. And then we're pretty comfortable. But Ben, I went to put on my belt this morning and I went to tug it and it was, I left it at 3,
okay,
but like it just naturally went to fourth hole territory.
No.
And I was like, well, this hasn't happened. I don't even know what this is. This is unheard of.
You're virgin. I mean, you found a belt you love and you're virgin on it not working for you anymore.
Well, I mean, I think it would still work if it extended one more hole, but I was like, that was unexpected, you know?
I like that.
Yeah.
That's a good start to the day.
That was a good start to the day.
I feel like when you walked in the office this morning, I was like, there's a pep. That's a extra available belt hole.
That was. Yeah. Yeah. So who knows? A week from now, maybe I'll just be comfortably using it, you know?
Wow.
Who knows? Of course, we're going to Disney. So
yeah, right. So as this episode
feeling,
comes out,
I have a feeling. That said, I'm like, I can eat good at Disney and not overeat good at Disney. And at the same rate, for getting 20,000, 30,000 steps, you're not exercising. You know what I mean?
I tend to think that, yeah, there's a little bit extra built in there that kind of like does. I feel like you can under account for, because I feel the same way. Every time I go to Disney, I'm always like, oh boy, here we go. We're going to be eating a lot, eating heavy, you know, kind of having fun stuff, you know, do Epcot, the World Showcase,
right,
all that type of stuff. Like that's going to get you. But you are so mobile, you know, in a way that I feel like is not commonplace, I guess, necessarily. Like, I would say it's not uncommon for me to get 10,000 steps a day. It's pretty uncommon for me to get 20.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. Okay, so if y'all have ever heard our voices on ye old interweb, you know that we tend to ask plenty of what ifs, and that I'm nothing if not a bucket of worry and self-doubt. So if you've ever contemplated a business, but then what we like to call the Ben voice starts firing up, then look no further than Shopify to calm your nerves. Shopify in so many ways is like having a business partner who's like an old high school friend that went to the big city and worked a big job, but decided to come back to the hometown and is looking for someone to place their extraordinary talents. Because with hundreds of ready-to-use templates, Shopify helps you build a beautiful online store that matches your brand's style and comes with world-class expertise in everything from managing inventory to international shipping to processing returns and beyond. So quiet that Ben voice, but you know, do listen to this next part, because it is time to turn those what-ifs into with Shopify today. Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/poppop. Again, that's shopify.com/poppop. One last time for safety, shopify.com/poppop. Popcorn Culture is sponsored by BetterHelp. February has a funny way of putting relationships under a magnifying glass. It's like, surprise! Here's a month full of hearts, expectations, and emotional reflection, whether you asked for it or not. And no matter where you're at, partnered, single, or somewhere in between, having a space to sort through what you're feeling can make a huge difference. And something I've personally been reflecting on in my own sessions lately is my relationship with relationships during my high school and college years. I had this fear that if I took my eye off the ball, so to speak, with whoever I was seeing, it meant I'd lose them, which meant I was constantly distracted from sports, class, and homework. And it's amazing talking about this in therapy and looking back on it, how obvious it feels now and how not obvious it was then. But that's exactly the kind of benefit that you can get from trying out BetterHelp. They make it easy to get matched with the right therapist for you, and if for some reason it's not the right fit, you can switch to someone else at any time. So sign up today to get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com.
So there is that.
There's that.
A lot of extra, and it's hot, you know, you're sweating.
Also
a lot of extra calories going out the way in that regard. However, you mentioned Parkinson's law because I put that on here as well. I wasn't sure if you were familiar with it or not already.
I when I saw that you put it on there, I was like, I need to know what this is because I want to know if I have any working examples as well. So I did like a quick once over, but Parkinson's law, to the best of my review, was that you can fit the amount of work needed into the amount of time available.
Right. So I think it originated, there was like a book about it, and it was like almost like a humorous book, but it was making a real point.
Okay.
But yeah, the what Parkinson's law, and I brought it up today because as of this week, we are going to be like, you know, heavily, we as an office and basically every office in the world is like heavily exposed to it, but we see it like fluctuate a lot. And what it states is that work expands to fill the time available. So like if you, so the most famous law suggesting that a task will take as long as you give it regardless of its actual complexity.
Okay.
Which we run into this all the time at Super Carlin Brothers, where people will run into other creators and they'll be like, you know, we'll ask them about their schedules. And sometimes they'll be like, you know, oh yeah, everything we put out was filmed like 3 weeks ago. You know, we've got like X number of videos in the tank. You know, we're always working on something a month out, but you know, and you know, whatever.
Right.
You know,
that's not us.
That has never been us. We know it should be. We know that it would be more, it would be a less stressful existence if we could do it.
Right.
But the problem is that we are subject to this particular law where it's like, there will be times where it'll be like, you know, it's Wednesday and somehow we filmed a J vs. Ben last week. We've got the pop done. We filmed a theory and we've got Gryffindor done. You know,
right.
It's like, hey, guess what? Your entire work, everything you had to film is done and it's only Wednesday.
Right.
And therefore you'd think Thursday and Friday could easily be dedicated to expanding that lead into next week,
right,
where you could then expand that lead into the next week until, in fact, you were fully ahead,
right,
and you were a month out on content and everything was just hunky-dory. And yet it's not, because what happens is exactly this. We will have, if we get to that point where we have Thursday and Friday completely free and we don't have to publish another actual thing until next Wednesday,
yes,
you can bet it will take us 4 days to make that video all of a sudden.
It will.
Even though we could do it in a day.
Even though we know that we're capable of doing it in a day. But I also think that there's like, when you live on deadline, and like, it's funny because like, I remember, you know, dad growing up as like being in the world with like journalism and stuff. There was a magnet that I think he got from the Newseum, which was like, used to be like a museum you could go to about news in Washington, D.C. And it said like, "Not now, honey, I'm on deadline," or something like that. And I think it's always been like kind of like one of those funny things. And like, when I was a high school student, I was like, I feel like the procrastinator, you know, they would tell you like, "You've got 6 weeks to write this paper, you know, like get it done." And then it'd be like, "Yeah, like, you know, if I just write like a little bit, like each day, like it won't be that bad." But then it's like 2 days before it's due and it's like, "Well, I've written nothing and I have a 6-page paper due."
Right.
You know, so I don't know where this, you know, noise is going to come out of my brain, but somehow, some way, in the next 2 days, I will complete it.
Right.
And, but then I also, so I feel like, you know, coming to work every day and knowing that you're on deadline fairly constantly, like even recording the pop first thing Monday morning for something that goes live on Friday feels like it has a deadline attached to it, because if you don't have it done by midday on Monday, like you're starting to like eat into available time that you're supposed to be using for theory writing or for Gryffindor or whatever.
Yeah.
As like the week unfolds. But then I also feel like there's like that diagram that you can look at that's like important, unimportant, urgent, non-urgent.
Right.
And it's sort of like, sometimes there are tasks that are non-urgent, non-important, but still do need to be done eventually. And so I do feel like there's a layer to getting ahead enough to where you've like unlocked non-urgent, non-important tasks.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be like cleaning the office,
yeah,
type of thing, you know. Well,
as you bring that up,
okay, yeah.
This is another area of Parkinson's law,
okay,
wherein, so not only will your will the length of time it takes you to complete something expand to the amount of time you've given yourself, but junk will expand to fill the space allotted.
Okay.
So like, if you have like a really, like, you know, and as even as I look around this room, I'm like, it's like very true. Like, we have like just empty Pokemon card boxes like where they are, and it's like, we don't, there's like across the room from us there's a table, and underneath it are just empty Pokemon card boxes that are effectively trash that we need to throw away. They have been there for months, and the reason is we don't use that space very often, and as such, it's like stuff is just allowed to collect there,
right
like that space isn't in our way, so we have put junk there instead of putting the junk elsewhere.
It's not even like quite like a hoarding type situation where we're like, we might want these. Like, it's not even like we're kidding ourselves into believing that they could be useful at some point in the future. It's just, they're not in our way and nobody really has to interact with them at all. So you're right. They are present.
They are present.
Yeah.
Right. But if you look at every corner of our like office space, it's also true.
It's also true.
You know?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
That's the case. Like, we don't interact with the other corner of the room either, and there's stuff there. And it's like, if we're not in that space a lot. Now, the thing is, if we started using it, we'd clean it up.
Right.
You know, like, we're not like incapable of doing it, but like, this is just like the nature of things. Like, if you had a smaller space, you wouldn't have more junk because you wouldn't have where to put it.
Right. I know. I mean, and this, it honestly reminds me a lot, because we're doing this like massive renovation at our house right now. And as part of that, we had this like dumping zone in our attic that we have now officially decided that we're going to convert into like our primary bedroom.
Right.
You know, and so it's like, it's really unbelievable to go up there and think that this room that was formerly full of like junk, we like took it all out, we sold some of it, we gave a lot of it away, we donated a lot of it, you know, at like Goodwill and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We threw some stuff away that like wasn't, you know, worthy of the other options. You know, so it's like, you've cleared out all of this space for what now is going to be like somewhere where I spend a third of my day every day.
Right.
And it is kind of bonkers to me to think that like what will probably go on to be like one of the most special rooms in my house was formerly a dumpster.
Right.
You know, it's like, that's weird.
That's weird. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's like, okay. Okay. So yeah, if there was nowhere else to put it, we put it there. But the good thing about having kind of a small house too, though, is that then you don't have the ability to let stuff really accumulate anywhere else.
Right.
And that's something I think Alice and I have learned about, like the way that we live, is that we're like, we're not willing to like live with the junk. So we will make it go away if we have to live with it. So we've eliminated one of the only places there was left to put junk.
Right. And so
hopefully now we will not have junk.
Now you will have less junk. Yeah.
Right. Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that's funny. But then there's like a bunch of little like sayings that go along with this as well, where it's like, you know, if you have like a 10-hour workday versus a 5-hour workday, it's like, then this like Parkinson's law would suggest that like that, like having 10 hours as a workday gives you twice as much time to fall behind on something.
Okay.
You know?
Sure. Yes. Right. I follow your meaning. And so they like, this would be like an argument for like a 4-day work week.
Right.
Or like a shorter work day or
right,
something.
Right. Right. It's like you gave yourself 8 hours. So that means you took the full 8 hours to right. do all the work.
So then the other question there though, that I mean, just for the pure sake of the conversation, not really, cause I think I have a strong feeling about it, would then be like, is there a pace question involved where it's like, is it nice, like, you know, if you were going to like run a marathon, for example, it's like, let's say the idea about running the marathon and your strategy was like, I'm going to run 5 miles and then I'm going to like stop for like a water break and, you know, catch my breath for however long or whatever. And then I'll start back up again. And then it's like every 5 miles, I'm going to do that. So I know I've got some built in breaks.
Right.
You know, the alternative is like, you don't stop for breaks at all. You just go full bore until you're done.
Right. Right. Like I've heard some people who like run marathon, like if you run a marathon in like 2.5 hours or something,
right.
You know, you're very fast. Like sometimes I've heard those people talking to me like, you know, I'm just as impressed with the people finishing in 4 hours because they had to run for 4 hours without stopping.
Right.
You know, yes. Like I don't think I could run for 4 hours without stopping, you know?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and it's incredibly difficult. Like, you know, then you're out on your feet for forever and you're exposed right. to the elements a lot longer.
Yeah.
It's a very good, good observation. So then the question would almost be like, you know, even if you're baking in like designated times throughout the day to like stop, breathe, water cooler, chat, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Go grab lunch, something like that. Like, it's almost like, does that help you? Does that make it more sustainable? Because then, of course, the counter argument to that sentiment may be, well, if you can do a 4-day work week, even if you're more high octane for 4 days, then you get a whole extra weekend.
Exactly. Right. You know? So that would be the argument. It's like, well, maybe you're more are you more stressed while you're there, but you're only there for 6 hours instead of eight? And it's like, well, maybe, but then you also get the 2 hours at the end of the day back.
Right.
Right. Right.
Yes. To go in
right.
and do productivity elsewhere or do rest elsewhere.
Right. And so then the real solution isn't just like you can, you know, it's not like, well, hey, on, you know, how, let's just keep dialing it back. Just have like a 2-hour work day and be like, just get it done or else, you know,
right.
Like if you only got 2 hours and if you're saying, you know, it's like the solution to this is to set reasonable, like realistic time frames in which to do stuff.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. This almost reminds me, we're friends with a content creator named, Wheezy Waiter, Craig. And, I think that back in the day he started making these vlogs where he would be like, we use no cell phones for a month. Here's what happened. We ate no sugar for a month. Here's what happened. And I think they were pretty popular
yeah.
episodes, you know, because it was sort of like he was taking like an extreme stance on something and then being like, I woke up and read the newspaper, you know, like I would drink my coffee and I would read the newspaper. And it's like an analog method instead of scrolling on my phone to figure out like what the world events were yesterday.
Right.
It would almost be interesting. I'm not suggesting team in case you're listening, that we do this, but it would almost be like an interesting experiment to be like, we ran every efficiency model we could think of. So for like the month of March, we sliced off Fridays.
Right. It was like, we did a 4-day work week. Here's what happened.
For a month. Here's what happened. And then, you know, for the month of April, it's like we did, you know, like 9 to 3 instead of 9 to 5, you know, and it's sort of like, so we kind of gave an extra day's worth of time off. You still work Monday through Friday, but like 2 hours less each day. So that's 10 hours, you know, it's a 30 right. hour work week all of a sudden. So it'd be like very interesting, but then it would almost be like, you know, you get to June, it's sort of like we worked 3 hours a day.
Right.
You know, it's like, here's what happened.
You know,
it's like, does the content still get posted? At what point in time do you literally start, like, where it's like you walk into the office from the moment you walk into the office, there is no like sip your coffee and have like a quick debrief on like, how was your evening? What'd you guys get into? Like,
right.
It's more just like we walk into the office and like you're straight to your computer and your fingers are on the keyboard and you're typing and clacking and recording and, you know, doing all this type of stuff. It's like, what would be the line where it's like, where you could not do it?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Like where like that is, I mean, I don't hate this idea even to like attempt, like just spend a month trying different models or whatever.
Right. Like see what happens.
And yeah. See what happens. You know?
Yeah. Especially if everybody involved kind of knows like the terms of the agreement, because that's the other thing too, is that like, I do think humans are highly adaptable. So it's like, I do think if all of a sudden we mandated, you know, I mean, it's similar to what we saw during like the pandemic. It's like, you know, all of a sudden if everybody kind of needs to work from home, like you find a way to work from home. And like plenty of people have done that and plenty of people have been able to continue careers doing that. And then some other careers have backtracked and pulled people back in because productivity wasn't as good, you know, or something, or maybe they just better to see people or be able to walk past their office and ask them a question. I don't know. But part of the thing too, is that it's almost like sometimes if you're running a small business like we do, you know, there's five of us total. So it's a pretty like, you know, close knit environment. But it's the kind of thing where if you were to introduce a 4-day work week and then you get like 2 months in and you're like, man, this is really rough. It's like people will have already adapted their lives to Friday, Saturday, Sunday off.
Right.
You know, and it's sort of like then to like take that back, it's almost like the calling people back into the office from like work from home positions where it's like, I sort of got used to that. Like I kind of had like a whole routine. I could wear my sweatpants down low, my button down up top so I could cop on my Zoom calls and still look professional.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Be kind of comfy, you know, like, you know, I created like a cozy office space in my home that, yeah. that I'm not using now if I come into the office and, that type of thing. So it would be almost like the way to do it would be like, all right, everybody involved, here's the plan. Here's what we're doing.
Right. We're going to try it out and we're eventually going to figure out if what we were doing originally was the best, if there's a better way to do it, and we'll just keep trying.
Right. But then you start to like think about like last week's episode of Through the Gryffindor, for example, was over 2 hours long.
Yeah, well, that's what, yeah. Part of what we do is like we record long things.
We do. Yeah. Yes. So like even just doing like the pop for an hour and Gryffindor for 2 hours, and then you've got two people doing it, that's three man hours per person, but 6 man hours total. To
right.
you know, record that, because there's my time that could be spent, you know, writing or cleaning or doing any of the other office related tasks, and there's your time similarly.
Right.
But we're both locked in both of these situations.
Yes,
we have to account for that.
We have to account for that, yeah. So there is that. Like, you know, we create long form content in the form of podcasts every week.
Right.
So, you know, like we can't cut that out entirely. But, you know, who knows? Maybe we could work faster and get more done, or get the same amount done in less time or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I just thought like we experience this a lot where we are like approaching, like right now, this week, we are all prepping in office for you and me to be out of office next week while we're at Disney.
Right.
And I guarantee you, we're going to get it all done.
Like, right. Yes.
You know, even though in a regular week, we won't get this amount done, even though we clearly could.
Right. Yes. Because that's the same thing. So you talk about like 6 man hours to record the pop Gryffindor or whatever, because 3 for me, 3 for you. When you think about both you and I being out for a week,
right.
That's 80 man hours that right. are lost.
Right.
You know, it's like, that's unbelievable.
Yes. Yes. And yet it will get done, which means we could always get it done.
Right.
That was another line I read about Parkinson's law, is that like, if you're always waiting for the last minute to do something, that means that it was only ever going to take a minute to do it. You know,
well, that's also true,
right? Yeah. And a minute doesn't have to be 60 seconds there. It can just mean like, oh my gosh, I didn't start this until today. And it's like, well, then you only ever needed whatever, the 4 hours it took you to do it, you know?
Right. Well, there's also like a polish scenario that I feel like comes into play. Like,
there is.
You know, because, and not necessarily even just like taking something that already is and making it better because you spent more time on it, because that certainly exists. Like, one of the things I always think is fun is to like, you know, see a video of an artist who's like, here's me drawing a picture of someone's face in 30 seconds. Here's me doing it like in 30 minutes. Here's me doing it in 3 hours. You know, when you get to see like how much better somebody can be at accomplishing a task if they spend 3 hours on it versus 30 minutes versus 3 minutes or whatever. Right. You know, and it's like, you, okay, wow, okay, more time obviously yields a better product. But then we have the subjective experience of trying to determine what we think is our best available idea every single week. You know, so like, I came in this morning and I've been like watching Lord of the Rings at home with Alice over the weekend because it's just been like a fun, cozy, we've been snowed in type of like,
oh, yeah,
really long movies, whatever. It's been fun. And so I had this like Lord of the Rings idea. And so like, you know, you walk into the office and it's sort of like, here's something I was thinking about. And everybody in the room is kind of like, that is a good question. You know, so you're like, okay, it's a little bit of validation there. Like maybe that's a good one. But also we don't really cover Lord of the Rings that often. So it's like, if it was my only idea, it might obviously be
right. It's like, well, we got nothing else,
but we have this one idea, so that's what we're going with. But then the backup to that would almost like, and this would almost be like what I would call polishing, would be like, what is our best idea? It's like, let's keep hunting. What else do we have? Because it's like, that is an idea, but it might not meet the demands of like what our viewing audience is accustomed to.
Right.
And so it's like, while it might not be a bad idea, it might not work as content.
Mm-hmm.
So then you kind of feel like, I'm not sure. So like, maybe I should think about it a little bit longer, but this definitely happens to us. Like, you know, last week we made a video that was primarily about Mundungus Fletcher,
right,
from the Harry Potter series. And Mundungus is the kind of character, and this surprised me because I guess I hadn't really thought about it, because he shows up in book 5, you know, as far as the story is concerned,
right,
he's the one who abandons Harry, and that's why they get attacked by Dementors and all that stuff with Dudley. So you've like heard his name a good few times. Actually, I think he shows up at the end of Goblet of Fire.
I think, yeah, Dumbledore was like, Mundungus Fletcher, Arabella Fig, the old crowd.
That's it. Yeah. So his name is first mentioned, I think, in Goblet of Fire. But anyway, he doesn't actually show up in the films until 7.
Right.
And he shows up in 7 to be part of the Battle of the Seven Potters, where he introduces himself as Mundungus Fletcher. So I was like, as we're writing, I'm like, there are plenty of people who are like, you're writing a video about that guy? Like the kind of scummy dude who shows up for like a bit, yeah, of one movie,
right?
You know, and it's sort of like, yeah, we are.
That's right.
Yes, that's what's happening today. And so, you know, for what's worth, I think it was a great video, and you should definitely go watch it.
Yeah.
But also, that being said, it's probably like, given an opportunity where we had like an idea that's about Dumbledore or Voldemort or Harry or Hermione or Ron versus Mundungus Fletcher, we probably make all of those videos before we make the Mundungus video,
right?
You know, like, but it doesn't mean it's a bad idea. It just means that the deadline encouraged our belief in it, which I think helps me write, like with dedication and commitment.
Right.
Like, because it's sort of like, this is the best idea we have. Now let's write about it the best we're able to do. And I almost feel like if given better options, I wouldn't write as good of a script as we could write.
Right, right. Like if you get to that scenario where we have, you know, we finished everything by Wednesday, we have Thursday, Friday, you might be like, these are like golden days of the week where we can like really focus on it or something. It's like, you know, you don't want to get there Thursday and be like, you know, would you sit down on Thursday morning then and be like, all right, got my Mundungus Fletcher idea? Because you're going to be like, well, Mundungus Fletcher, it's a good video and I really like where it goes, and it has like it's perfectly plausible and it involves Umbridge and everyone hates Umbridge and that's great. Right. So like there's that, but do people really care about Mundungus Fletcher when they're more likely to care about something else? So like I could commit myself to this, but do I think it's a good enough idea to commit when I have this golden opportunity,
right,
worth of time?
Right.
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
And so that's exactly what I'm saying, because like, this is the kind of thing where it's like, I am at war with myself all the time because I do feel like there's like that potential to be like, you know, to demand of yourself to be more productive, to be further ahead, that type of thing. But then I try to take a few steps back as well. And this is like, so when we think about like last week's episode of Popcorn Culture, where we were talking a lot about like, who am I? And like my struggle with this like inner self and that type of thing. It's like, you can look at this scenario and you can criticize yourself for it because you could be like, you could be further ahead. You are capable of that. You should be doing more. But like, sometimes that's like the negative mean voice in your head. Whereas the alternative is like, you work great on a deadline. Deadlines work well for you. They bring the best creativity out of you, and that is what yields the best product. And so it's like, you could be hard on yourself because you're falling victim to Parkinson's law, or you could be proud of yourself because like, look, deadlines work for me. I found the scenario in life where I get to operate to the best of my ability because it enforces deadlines.
Right.
You know, and it's like, to me, those two divisions are like, you know, not to make it like super deep and philosophical all of a sudden, but like, sometimes like granting yourself that right to be like, that's what's happening here. That's like, I'm good at what I do because of the deadline.
Right.
Like, it's maybe not the most agreeable thing for everybody involved. And they're like, wouldn't it be nice if we didn't have to like work up to the wire every day? But it's like, unfortunately, that's part of like, you know, if I don't think I ever refer to myself as like an artist in this realm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't really think of like what we do covering other people's content necessarily crosses that line. I'm sure there are people who would argue that, but that either way, like, you know, if part of our artistic expression requires that, then that's what it requires.
Right.
You know, like that's, I mean, there's a scene in Name of the Wind where, you know, Quoth, the main character, is this really good songwriter and musician and performer, and he's fantastic with words. That's like his thing. And he gets hired to come in and help this kind of like highfalutin noble, like woo effectively a potential
suitor. Yeah,
exactly. And so like upon arrival, like, you know, there's this moment where the noble is like, well, what do you need? Like, I've heard some poets need like a trunk of like rotten apples, and you lift the lid and breathe in the vaporous smell, and that helps spark the creative whatever.
Right.
And when you think about like artists, you know, like real artists, it's like, it's not even like uncommon to think like, oh yeah, he's always got to be playing Backstreet Boys while painting these masterpieces. And it's like, why? It's like, it's the contrast of the unimportant with the important, you know, like, and if if somebody frames it in that way, it's like, you're like, I like that. That's cool.
Right.
You know, because it's like, this is somebody who's making art that will change the world. But what he's fueling himself with while making that art is something that like a lot of people may see as like surface level in terms of like what the Backstreet Boys lyrics are saying.
Right.
You know, they're not exactly the deepest rooted necessarily.
Sure.
You know, do you follow my meaning? Maybe it's just part of our process.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, to using that same example, like to that end, it's like, Quoth is hired by the mayor in that situation to help him. Yes. Woo this lady.
Right.
Or whatever. And Quoth like does the job like super duper well, super admirably, totally wins her over on behalf of the mayor. And like, you know, they get married. Wow. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Super great. Now it is like amazing that Quoth is able to do this, because on the flip side, Quoth can't get a girl to save his life. He sucks at talking to women.
Right.
But yes, when he's being forced to do it on behalf of somebody else, it turns out he's amazing at it. Like, being given the deadline of like, I need you to help me, he's great. But when he has to help himself, he sucks.
Exactly. Yes. 100%. Yeah. Like, he misses every opportunity and is always fumbling the bag whenever it comes to his own romantic endeavors.
Right.
You're exactly right. Yeah. Then he shows up and he's like literally working for who is effectively a king.
Right.
You know? And it's like, the stakes couldn't be higher.
Right. Right. And he's like, no problem. I know exactly what we're going to do.
Right.
I'm going to write all these letters. I'm going to write these songs. You're going to do it in this order. She'll be yours by next Thursday, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It takes longer than that, but.
Right. You know? Classic Quoth.
Quoth. And then, yeah, meanwhile, every time he runs into Denna, oh, my goodness.
My goodness.
Yeah, everyone's just like, dude, she likes you. And he's like, I don't think that's even possible. She probably doesn't even know I'm real. Yeah.
We've all been there.
We've all been there, Quoth. All been there.
It's very funny. Actually, I'm going to shift gears ever so slightly, but we'll still keep it in the vein of Name of the Wind. But I feel like the first time I read the series, I was like, I relate to Quoth so much. Mm-hmm. Because I do feel like in high school, I would go through this rigmarole when it came to dating, mm-hmm. where it would be like abundantly clear that the person is like on board to go to the movies or whatever. Uh-huh. And yet I would convince myself through and through that it's like, nah, I'm being mm-hmm. overconfident. I'm overthinking it. Like I'm seeing what I want to see.
Seeing what I want to see.
Exactly. It's like, but you know, and everybody else would be like, dude, she likes you. And I'd be like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like, consider the words you just said. Did those seem likely? Cause I don't think so. Right. You've seen her, you've seen me. We know each other, right? Like, when I talk to her, yeah, we're both, like, laughing and smiling and having a good time. But, like, likes me? I bet she hates me.
Probably. There are plenty of
I don't even think she knows my name, okay?
Are we even sure?
Yeah.
Does she? Do you think she's aware there's a Jamin at the end of the Ben?
I doubt it. Yeah. I doubt it.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Good times. Anyway, mm-hmm. then the more that I read the story, the less I relate to both, which is also kind of interesting.
Oh, yeah, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, anyway. Do we have a transition in this?
Sure.
Okay, Jay. So, I think two weeks ago, something like that, we had a gigantic conversation about the show Pluribus.
Oh, we sure did.
Yes. Yeah. And it has been very interesting. And without getting into too much detail, because I really don't want to like give spoilers. But I have a couple more thoughts about the experience of watching it, because I've now heard the same feedback from two people after I've raved about it at them.
which was
your wife, Beth, and Ethan, the editor, who does Gryffindor and, you know, Super Carlin Brothers videos for us here in office, who are both kind of like, I liked it. I didn't like it, but I liked it. Like, it's... Like, I think the series is like, there's a chance it's not entertaining in the way that people might expect based on how much I would insist they watch it. But I think what it does do is make you think.
Yeah. I mean, I was personally captivated from wire to wire.
Okay, good. Good. Yes. I mean, I was too,
yeah.
But the thing that surprised me was that like these two people who are in my life, who I feel like I tend to vibrate at least a somewhat shared frequency with.
Right.
I was like, oh, interesting that they both kind of had the same feedback for me, about the show. But, one of the things that you brought up about the series, is how it could potentially be like a bit of like an allegory for like the Garden of Eden. And Adam and Eve.
Right.
And what is interesting to me about that, which I guess like if you're unfamiliar with that narrative, I'm probably not the person to tell you. So Jay can backfill any knowledge I don't have. But effectively, there's like perfection in the Garden of Eden.
Everything right. It's is, a paradise.
It's a paradise. Yeah. And the thing that they're not supposed to do is pick an apple from a tree.
Right. Yeah. From the tree of knowledge or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if you do that, then that is like enacting sin.
That, yeah, it's like, that's where, yeah, like, that's like, yes, more or less. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Eve picks the apple from the tree.
Right.
That ends up happening. And so I, like, this is like an interesting thing because, like, I don't have any religious knowledge at all. Which I think is always interesting, like, given that you in adulthood have sort of like entered the realm of the church.
Sure.
Like with your family. And so like, it's interesting to me to like be aware of the story of the Garden of Eden, to see Pluribus, not make the connections, and then have you make the connections for me, and then almost see the whole show again over in a brand new light.
Right.
And then take that information and apply it to like the way that I felt about like other stories in the past as well, where what I'm trying to say is I think the story and the of the Garden of Eden in the cautionary tale that I suppose it's meant to be is far more profound than I think I've ever given it due credit for, mm-hmm. where otherwise it always felt kind of like abstract symbolism. Mm-hmm. You know, sort of like you've got these two people and they're living in perfect harmony, and what they're not supposed to do is pick the apple, but if you pick the apple, then devastation reigns and blah blah blah. And like, I don't think it ever really like occurred to me to like really think about symbolically or even the like words of wisdom that whoever penned this story was attempting to like convey to the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like when you see it in like a modern retelling, or you even just think about like the world, I don't know, the world the way I do, it's like, oh, it's kind of very smart. It's,
oh.
Like a, it's like a very, it's not just like, why an apple? You know, it's like, it doesn't have to be an apple. It just is an apple.
Right.
But
right,
an apple is very symbolic of like everything else. So it's like, if you let the symbol exist as the symbol, then there's a lot. I have so many thoughts and they're like running into each other in my head. Inside of Pluribus,
yes,
the people who have taken over the world will not cause harm.
Right. They cannot cause harm.
They cannot cause harm. They would work to not step on ants if given the, like, you know, the circumstance where it arose. You know, they would not even harm something as simple as an ant.
Right.
And that even extends to
plant life. Yeah.
So literally in Pluribus, there's a moment where the main character is going to say, pick an apple, like just do it.
Right. You know? Like, and you're like, it's a, what the Pluribus, the hive or whatever, has like realized about its own existence is that there is not enough, like because they can't harvest crops, because that would count as harming the plants.
Right.
Like, they can, if there's windfall, like if an apple falls from the tree, they will gratefully eat it. But they can't actually make the apple fall. They can't pick it, whatever. They just have to pick it up off the ground after it's fallen.
Right.
Right. And there's not enough, like, food in that way for them to survive indefinitely. Like, their population will plummet quickly, at least until a point where maybe there is enough food. I don't know.
Right.
But it will be a problem. And of course, if you're one of the surviving people, you're like, okay, like you might dislike that this has happened to the world, but also you're able to recognize, or at least Carol's like I don't like that they took over the world, but it, and even though they're all acting as like one hive mind, they are all still physically human people.
Right.
You know, like we, like it's bad that they die. And so she's like yelling at them, like, you know, just pick an apple or whatever. And it's said, you know, the first time it comes up, you're like, yeah, of course. Like that's, you know, they actually, just like a very funny scene where, you know, the hive has made a video for Carol and it's John Cena explaining to her the entire problem.
Right.
And she, or the individual formerly known as John Cena.
Right. Right. You know? Yes. Yes.
But they come back and they bring up the apple over and over and over again. And it's sort of like, right. Okay. It's not just that was like the example that one time. It's like really drawing attention to like pick an apple, you know, like that. But of course, if they do it, like, because what they're effectively saying is they won't cause harm. If you want to like zoom out and be like more like religious about it or whatever, you could say that they like are incapable of like sin, if or whatever. Like they are incapable of lying. They bring that up a lot.
Right.
Like they must tell the truth. They cannot cause harm. They will not do it or whatever, despite so many people dying in the act of them taking over the planet or whatever.
Right.
You know, there's that. But there's this, like, there's the other problem that Carol has where they, like, you know, they want to convert her, but in order to do that, they'll have to like extract something from her body, and because that would involve hurting her, they need to express permission to do it. And so that's like her wall, like, okay, well, I know if you have to get my permission, then I'm just never going to give it.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
So there you go. But then she's also yelling at them because she doesn't want humanity to die, like, pick an apple. And it's like, but see, here's the thing, Carol. If they pick the apple, if they cross the bridge into harming the plant, they have crossed the bridge into harming you, because you are a living organism too. And if, like, if they're treating everything equally, like, and then of course you can see where it's like a much bigger, you know, like picking the apple, of course, we wouldn't think of as a problem. But if they like do something against Carol's will, then it seems much more like morally wrong.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Yes. So it's like you may say, like, and as far as like the bar is concerned for committing, you know, an act that goes against their code, it's like there is no difference between picking the apple and going against her will, or right. like taking whatever they need from her without her consent. And so it's like, you know, if Carol could convince them to just simply eat the apple, then also then you've broken down the barrier that would prevent them from causing any other measure of bending of the rules.
Right.
Which effectively is like how we all live anyway.
Yeah.
Is like some agreement as to like what rules we bend in order to like sustain ourselves.
Right.
But then it's like you start to think about it and it's like, well, maybe the apple's not just like an apple, you know, right, like right. it's like it's right. not this like, because I always picture like the people standing there with like leaves covering themselves like as like their clothing, and like there's like, you know, the tree and the apple, and like that's the picture that comes to like mind in my head, and I'm sort of like, yeah, but it's like an apple, like why an apple, like, you know, like I like symbolically, like I don't get it.
Right. It doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter. The apple could be anything, whatever. But because it's an apple, now in the show, the fact that they're using an apple, it's like, is that the correlation they're drawing?
Right.
Because otherwise, the people in the hive or whatever have created quite a paradise. Like, you know, everything anyone could want. There is no, it's basically world peace, you know? Everyone's happy. Everyone's got what they need.
Right.
No one is fighting at all. Everyone's nice to each other. It is what you might consider like a certain kind of paradise.
Right.
Except there's no individuality for anyone at all, period.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
So then the question almost becomes like, is that something we put the thought experiment that I feel like the show is forcing you to ask is, how important is individuality to the human experience? And it's like, like, I don't feel like I have an answer to that question. Like, that feels like too big of a question to answer.
I think what they're saying is that it has a big role.
Yeah, well, I mean, yes, I do think it has a big role. It is a big role.
Yeah.
It's something that I think we would all deeply value as individuals.
Well, yeah.
I suppose the challenging remark there would be like, but we can achieve what you guys are all gunning for otherwise. But this is what it looks like.
Right.
You know, it's sort of like, this is like what I would come back to all the time. It's sort of like, it's a fork in the road. That's a bizarre fork in the road, because I don't think you could find a single person who would be like, nah, screw world peace. That's the worst.
Right.
Like, I think everybody could generally agree, like, hey, thumbs up. Good idea.
Right.
What, at the very least, what I say the showrunners are suggesting is like, it has to be extreme. Like, world peace is only achieved through the extreme, which is also saying that, like, in the meantime, nobody would be willing to give up individuality, because that's too important to what it means to be human. But what we need to recognize is that there is distance between what perfection can look like, you know, air quotes perfection, and where we are. And it's almost like the space that exists in between, it's almost like me saying, you could look at us not being, you know, like using the deadlines as like motivators for like making good work.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like you need to give yourself at least enough grace to excuse how you operate. And I feel like that is what lies in between the hive's utopia and our desire for being individuals.
Right. Well, I think eventually what the show was going to be saying is that, like, you know, like defining world peace or whatever, or this, like, you know, as like, not that there's no strife between people ever, just that there's not, just that, you know, people are provided for, but it doesn't mean you can't have disagreements or you can't have like highs and lows, because those are the things that make life life. Because then, like, you know, if you want to get like real, I'm not like particularly, you know, have any religious expertise or anything, but like, if you want to just like take a step back and like the broad strokes of the Garden of Eden and like Adam and Eve and stuff, whatever, it's like they pick the apple or whatever, and that introduces sin to mankind. It's like, you can interpret that as like humanity is like doomed to sin, or they can't help but sin or whatever. But the point is that that's what happens. And the point is like, There really wasn't any stopping it. Like, they were going to pick the apple. Like, mankind is not perfect. They will sin. And therefore, how did they save themselves? By following Jesus. Like, that's why Jesus comes down, because Jesus can absolve you of your sins. And so it's like perfection is not impossible, but like salvation is with Jesus, you know,
right?
More or less.
Okay. That's usually the part of the conversation where I become like more perplexed and probably just need more education,
sure,
understanding, because it's like every single thing you said, I was like, I'm following completely,
right?
And then it's also like, Huh. Okay.
Right. Well, then Jesus is, of course, God himself, you know, who made the Garden of Eden and everything like that. So, but then as far as the show goes, like, there's a bunch of, I bet the more religiously educated you are, the more you could parse out of the show or whatever. But, like, there's a section of the show where the Hive just sort of abandons Carol for a little while. Just sort of leaves her alone in the middle of Albuquerque, New Mexico, which, if you don't know, is just like a desert.
Right.
And then you later on get confirmation on exactly how long she was stranded for. And it's like 40 days and 40 nights. And you're like, well, that, look at that. They stranded Carol in a desert for 40 days and 40 nights. Like, right, what do you know?
Howdy.
That's like, you know, it's like Noah's Ark was out there for 40 days and 40 nights. And Moses was in the desert for 40 days. It's like, that's a pretty biblical, you know, thing a you're lot, drawing man. There. Yeah. Like, that seems on purpose. And then it's like, you know, you have like Jesus and the disciples, and it's like, that's Jesus and 12 people. And it's like, guess what? There were 13 survivors. And oh my gosh, one of them has like an absolute strict moral code, and he's on the cusp of performing a miracle towards the end of the season. And you're like, yeah, I see what's happening.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, but then it's like, what role is Carol? Because it's, you know, she's yelling at them to eat the apples. Like, is Carol the snake, or you know, what's going on here? or is it just sort of like, obviously there's going to be, you know, varying vibrations of interpretation to sort of fit the story. But if I had to guess, eventually I would say that they are going to, you know, stop the hive mind, and individuality will return, and people will have this memory of what it was like. And, you know, maybe that will help them move forward in like a more progressive kind of way. I don't know.
But. Yeah, I mean, it would be very interesting to see like where it's headed, because I do think that would be like a very interesting solve, would almost be like a world where they engage in human behavior, and by engaging in human behavior, what that does is it disrupts the hive completely and basically brings the world back to what it was. But there is no like, there's no MacGuffin. There's no like, there's one scientist who remains who's been secretly working in a lab, and they've figured out this aerosol spray that if we can put into the ozone layer will, you know, sprinkle rain over everybody, which will awaken them from the daze.
That yeah, is, there's nothing like that.
Exactly. But what would be interesting is if there is no, like, none of that exists at all. It's literally just like, you pick the apple, you become human. Like that's the example. Like it's right. Sort of like, you know, nothing deep or crazy or technological or, you know, otherworldly or godly needs to happen. Something simple happens, and that simple thing is the choice to be human.
Right. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
Right.
Right. Like, because they're constantly trying to convince Carol to join them, but will it be the other way around?
Right.
Where. Yes. You know, and then it's sort of like the, you know, every time Carol's talking to what looks like one of them, she's effectively talking to the entire planet
at once.
Right. Yes. So, yes. What can she or, you know, one of the survivors do to convince them? Because like throughout the first season, you get small glimpses into the other survivors. And at first, and like they certainly seem to be enjoying themselves quite a bit, you know, in this life where everything is provided for them. But it's like, they'll go in and show it to you, and it's like, it looks really cool and fun, and you're like, oh man, that'd be so great if that was my life. But then it'll like, you know, they'll finish playing it out or something, and then immediately all of the people who were helping them play it out just return to like being, you know, their zombie, clean it up, move on selves. And it's like, it was all fake. So it's like, as much as you might be enjoying themselves, the fakeness will eventually like be too much to grapple with, I think.
Like, yes, like there is no substitute for an authentic human experience.
Right. And so what they're having is like what feels like a dream human experience where they can have anything they want, but because it's not authentic, I don't think it can last.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I agree. Like even the person who most willing to take advantage of the situation will eventually grow tired of not having a real exchange.
Right, right. Yeah. Like there's a scene where this guy is like, you know, clearly worked out with the hive, like we're going to, you know, play out like the end of a James Bond movie where I'm gambling and I win the final hand with a royal flush and,
right,
you know, I'm surrounded by beautiful women and party goers and whatever. And of course, it's all, you know, the camera zooms through and it looks like just the most happening, cool Vegas party you've ever been to. And there's a guy with an eye patch and he's evil. And, you know, he reveals his hand and our, you know, survivor guy reveals his hand. And of course he wins. But it's like, And he just enjoys it so much, like, oh my God, I got to live that out or whatever. But it's like, but you didn't even really win, you know?
Right, like you staged all
you
of
staged it.
It
all. Like none of it was real. You don't know any of those people and now they're all gone again.
Right.
You know, it's like that is not sustainable, even if it was really fun to do at first.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So it's going to be, part of me is almost just like, Jay, we just need to create a miniseries just talking about, you know.
Oh, I know. I mean, it's such a good show. It's like we're going to be like 2 years before we get the next installment or whatever or right. something. It's like, oh my gosh. Whatever. There'll be other things to watch between now and then.
That's right. You know. That's right. Yeah. But anyway, I mean, as is the case, you know, it's like I'm jazzed whenever there's something that gets me to think. And the more that I feel like you and I talk about it, like especially even just having like different perspectives on it, it's like, you know, it's like you get these like, it's like reading Name of the Wind for the first time, being like, oh, I identify with Quoth. And like more time going on, I'm like, maybe I less identify with Quoth.
Right.
Like, it's like you start to take different pieces from the story, or you might like look at it from like a deeper perspective, which I guess on the whole is really like what we're doing with our job. You know, it's like, It's like, I think that's sort of like even going and getting lost in the world of Harry Potter. It's like, you know, we don't treat it as if they're characters on a page. We treat it as if we know their actual motivations and
right.
behaviors as individuals.
Right. Like, it was history.
Yeah. Right. 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 Yes. Dumbledore would never do this.
I know. Right. Like, come on. Like, yeah, it's like he would if you just wrote the next sentence and right. said he did.
But, yeah. But nobody, you wouldn't do that.
But he can't do that. Right, I don't think that sentence would be capable of being written, you know?
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Anyway, y'all, thank you so much for tuning in. Let us know, have we convinced you to watch Pluribus yet?
Oh, yeah. Right,
yeah. Send any feedback you may have, popcornculturepod@gmail.com, or if you'd like to support the show, you can do so at patreon.com/popcornculture. Otherwise, until next time,
pop pop.
Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager, and the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin. Y'all, tour season is upon us, and we've just added a bonus show to the roster. Jay and I will be heading to Madison, Alabama on May 23rd in partnership with the Rocket City Trash Pandas minor league baseball team for a one-of-a-kind experience. We will have a full live show, complete with meet and greet, Jay vs. Ben, and a live recording of Through the Gryffindor, plus admission to the Trash Pandas game. Pricing for this show is a little bit different. There's a flat $75 ticket that gets you the meet and greet access, our recording, and the game all included. Tickets are available starting January 16th at 11 a.m. Eastern or 10 a.m. Central and are limited. But also don't forget that we're additionally heading to the Southwest for shows in Denver, Salt Lake City, Las Vegas, Phoenix, Houston, and Dallas, all kicking off on March 7th through the 16th. Links to all of the shows will be available at supercarlinbrothers.com/events or in the show notes for every episode.